Welcome to today's webinar, compiled and produced by the team at biznews.com. All of our webinars are interactive. We encourage you to pose questions to our guests. The more challenging, the better. And the earlier you get the questions in, the better the chance of having them answered. The recording of this webinar will be available later today on the biznews.com channel on YouTube. Yeah, well, there it is. I'm Alec Hogg, and a warm welcome to you. We've got a cracking program coming up for you. The next hour, we'll be focusing on Gerry Fourie, the chief executive of Capitec, the man who took over the job on the 1st of January, officially anyway, 1st of January 2014. I'm going to show you a share price in a little while that will blow your socks off. The way that Capitec shareholders have benefited under his guidance has been quite extraordinary. Anyway, there are lots of questions because Capitec's doing new things. The partnership that it's put together with SA Home Loans. On this program, we spoke with Easy Equities as chief executive, Charles Savage, about that partnership. And there's good news there as well. But all of that's still to come. First up, though, before we bring Gerry in, David Shapiro. And today, our guest market commentator is Corky Kooiman. Corky, maybe I'm going to have to help Corky a little bit there to open up your webcam as well. We did see Corky just a couple of minutes ago, didn't we, David? And we can hear him.
Am I there?
There we go. And there he is. I think this is wonderful to see you on screen, Corky. There were a few people who weren't believing that you really existed. They thought you were a cardboard cutout because every time we talk to you on this webinar, we don't see your face, but you're looking as handsome as ever. Lovely to see you. And I must ask the two of you before we get into our main event of the day, your thoughts post the U.S. election. David, I know, is not a Trump supporter. I'm not going to ask you to tell us who you would have voted for, David, but I presume you're happy with the result. Because we've been quoting you, or you've been quoted all over the place, as saying that it's good for South Africa that Biden is going to be the new president.
Well, Biden's much more pragmatic. He's a lot more predictable, you know. And I think from that point of view, he's willing to talk to people. And I think that's why there's a sigh of relief around the world. The mayor of Paris said, you know, welcome back, America. I don't know whether you were referring to the Paris Accord or whether just generally that we'll see Biden, you know, talking to Europe in much more conciliatory tones and you know, around trade and other issues. And I think that's why markets are just picking up. We could see an expansion of world trade, you know, not threatening with tariffs anymore and not expecting the morning tweet to send the markets all over the tweets, you know, to send markets all over the place, less volatility. So I think if you put that's really what I was hoping for. I've got no strong feelings towards Biden. He's 77. You know, he's a lot older than I am.
Many, many years older.
So, and I think I see him as a circuit breaker, just giving us some breathing time to get things on. So I think that's where, you know, that's where I'm coming from. And that's where hopefully you know, they're not going to talk. We won't have a president who thinks of us as a toilet, you know. So, that's hopeful for EMs, and EMs are reacting. They're responding that way.
EMs meaning emerging markets.
Emerging markets, yeah.
South Africa as well. Before we bring you in, Corky, for your thoughts on the U.S. election, we have to make sure that everybody can actually hear us and that they know how to participate in this program, Biznews community members, that is. So here's our Stuart Lohman, our general manager. Stu, do you want to take us through the technicals?
Excellent. Thanks, Alec, and welcome, guys. Just quickly, if you can hear my voice and see Alec, David, and Corky on screen with a presentation underneath, can you just give me a high five? There's a little high five button on the control panel. Just need to see a few of those to make sure. There we go, Alec, got some coming through. Lovely stuff. Alec, also like to keep a conversation, as you mentioned, about the questions. So please get them in early. To do that, there's little questions dropped on that same control panel. If you put your questions, Alec can pass them on to the relevant guests. But Alec, all looks good this time.
Fabulous. Thanks, Stu. Excellent. Corky, your thoughts post-US election for investment markets?
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what David says. The big problem more is that obviously the Democrats will be much more socialist. So you'll get attempts, and that's where the split Senate is important. But you know, you'll get attempts to increase tax rates, to a lot of socialist programs. And as we know, governments are very poor at running socialist programs. There's a lot of leakages. So you get effectively capital that will be allocated from the private sector to government to decide how that gets allocated, which for capitalists is a nightmare. I've got a lot of friends in New York who are ready to emigrate, who are foaming at the mouth. How can we live with this? But I think, so for the dollar and for emerging markets, it's good simply, and you're going to get more, consistent policy making, and the more socialist policies combined with the high debt ratio that America has means lower growth for America. And so maybe you will have a 4 or 5 year period, which will be different from the 2008 to 2020, where you'll have a weaker dollar. And that is good for emerging markets. We've already seen it almost since June, where emerging market currencies started strengthening. And that takes less pressure off them in terms of interest rates. And that will stimulate growth, in other countries. So, I think for markets generally, this is a good event. Maybe not so much for US, but even there, you know, the more greater reliability on government will be good.
We've invested heavily in the BizNews share portfolio in the U.S. and particularly in exponential shares, tech shares particularly. David, do you think this could be bad news, a Biden presidency, and if the Senate were to go to the Democrats and they were then able to push through those socialist programs that Corky's talking about for tech shares?
I think why markets are going up is that they won't get control of the Senate, even if they do get the 30 votes. So there's two runoffs in Georgia. If they get it and it's 30-30, they won't exercise their discretion by using the vice president's vote. You know, they're going to be a lot more careful. So I'm not concerned about socialist policies. I think they will be tamed, you know, and I think that's why markets are responding the way, you know, they are. And I think that's also going to apply to regulatory issues on big tech companies. But I think where the values lie are probably slightly lower tech, you know, more mid-caps now that I think will start to emerge. And we've got to start looking for those. I haven't got any ideas. I'm still sticking to my big ones for the meantime. They're pricey. We know they're pricey. And perhaps with better markets developing, we're going to look for something just below those big techs, you know, those somewhere there. But I'm very positive on markets. And the positive is because we know a stimulus package is going to come. We just don't know how big it's going to be, but it's coming. And, you know, we've already seen that in Europe, and we're going to see it in Europe in December, and we've seen it in the UK. So, for equity people, this is great. You know, this is it. We're feeding.
Yeah, two little points on that. We saw the Cloudflare share price react aggressively to good financial results. So that's the next level down of the tech shares that you talk about. That really had a fantastic run on Friday. I think it ended up 11%, but it was more than 20% up at one stage. And the second point is the stimulus that's continuing to go or pushed into markets. I think, what's it now, Corky? Round number four that is likely to come through in the U.S. with Biden.
Look, the stimulus is good and bad news. The market is in danger of becoming like a drug addict, that every time it wants more stimulus, which all the stimulus really does is also adds to the debt level. And by the way, that's why banks have been ebb and flowing as well, because stimulus does mean more inflation, and inflation might mean a steeper yield curve, and that's good for banks. On the other hand, growth is also good for banks. But the stimulus, I think short term is good, just to make sure that we don't have too much damage while, you know, the second wave of COVID is still hitting us. But the economies will have to live off or without a stimulus soon. And that is, I suppose, the remaining uncertainty. You know, it's, I think the two big uncertainties still is Brexit. Those negotiations still ongoing. There's obviously one more that affects more UK, Europe. And then, you know, how strong will the economies be post all the stimulus and help packages that we are seeing? You know, we believe that, you know, you'll have a normal recovery, that, you know, confidence will increase. Unemployment will start improving again, and, you know, economies will actually surprise next year on the positive side. And as David said, I think, you know, having a Biden presidency might actually help that as well.
Well, we are bringing Gerry Fourie in as soon as we can manage to get the tech right on that side. I think it's a little bit like the process you went through, Corky, when you have your IT guys with the firewalls not letting anything through. Gerry, yeah. I see we should be able to hear you, but we can't see you yet. Can you hear us loud and clear?
Yeah, I can hear you very loud and clear. Good afternoon, everyone. But we can't get the webcam working.
All right. Well, I'll
try again.
I've just sent you a request. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, I think we did see you a little earlier. It'd be nice to see you, but not to worry. It's more important that you are with us on the program. Before we go into the other conversations, and I know David and Corky are itching to ask you all kinds of questions, I've got to take you back a few years, Kelly, when we were meeting in London. And at the time, I asked you whether you would ever invest into the UK market, because if you recall, my personal experience there was that the UK banks are not that good and they could do with a bit of a Capitec shaking up. And you said at the time, we would, but there's a bank here called Metro Bank who are in our space and are doing very well. Well, Metro Bank has fallen dramatically, and it's at a fraction of the price that it was, nothing to do with their operations, but a lot to do with the way that, well, I guess a few scandals that broke there over the ownership and things like that. Now, with a rand strengthening in to the degree it has, Metro Bank sitting at a fraction of the price that it was at when we last spoke, is something like that. And I know you have made an offshore investment already, and you can tell us about that, I'm sure. But is a Metro Bank even coming onto your radar? Do you guys talk about things like that, or is it too much on your plate locally?
No, Alex, currently we're not talking anything about overseas investments. As you know, we bought Mercantile, and our biggest focus is now to make certain that we rebuild Mercantile to the fundamentals of Capitec, where simplicity and transparency is key. So that will be our focus. You know, it's one thing about Capitec. We've always believed don't do too many things, do one or two things, but really focus on it. So it's now business banking, and then we believe there's still a lot of scope on the retail side to focus on.
David, do you want to kick off the questions?
I will. I thought you were going to show us a chart because I want to add to that. I've just been doing a bit of work.
Let me show you that chart.
Because I want to add something there that we can talk about. Yeah. Okay.
So here's a chart of Harry's period as CEO at Capitec. When he took over on the 1st of January 2014, although looking back at our discussions at the time, Harry, you were actually running the place since October the previous year. But anyway, I took this from the 1st of January. The share price was around $200. It's now $1,200. So it's gone up six times in the 6 years. Now, that's an extraordinary increase. At a time that there were a few people wondering initially whether Capitec was going to miss Rian Stassen, Gerry's longtime colleague, and when he stepped down, David. So I don't know if you want to pick up from that.
There are a couple, you know, for people who are listening to this and or watching this, I think it's absolutely essential that we give a bit of history, and not deep history, but just the Capitec success story, because a lot of questions are going to be around that. You know, Capitec today has a market cap of $145 billion. Now, to give that in, compare that with the other banks, you've got First Rand at 230, Standard Bank at 184, but you've got APSA at 88. That comes in. Now, so it means that Capitec is far bigger than APSA and probably nearly three times bigger than Nedbank and probably four times bigger than Investec. Now, this is the bank that only started. You showed that chart when you introduced Kerry. You know, this was only started in the year 2000. So in that, if you would have invested 100 Rand 10 years ago in Capitec, it's worth 923 Rand today. So if you would have, that's an increase of 800%, 24.5% per annum. And that if you would have invested in First Rand, you've made 7.5% per annum. If you would have invested in the other banks, they're probably all negative. So it gives you an idea of the cumulative return you would have made on Capitec. So, I mean, it's been a phenomenal story. And along the way, there have been huge number of critics. Now, every year there's some analyst with lots of degrees and, you know, lots of figures or letters behind his name who's trying to knock Capitec. But where I want to start off with, if I can, is that I remember talking to Rian many years ago when Capitec first started, and he said, and this is subject to correction, Kerry, but he said that the success of Capitec was that they never had legacy issues. They never had bricks and mortar banks. And also, they were almost a discard of the APSA merger, in which Bank of Boerland was discarded, and they had picked up, I think, the IT from Bank of Boerland. And it was very robust IT in the sense that to expand it, you only had to add on servers. In other words, you didn't have to rewrite as the bank expanded. So it's a big question that I have about the IT side as Ferry goes into new areas. And the other was simply the trust that they formed with their customers. They never offered fancy products. You walked in, it was either black or black. You know, that's all you could have. You know, it was like Ford. You know, the only choice was to get a black Model T. It was very simple, and that built the trust. There was uncomplicated issues when people walked into the bank. And through that, they built a huge understanding with their client base, I think, which continues today. So I think going on to that, I think the question that I want to ask, Kerry, is number one, on the IT, as you go into easy equities, as you start to do these mergers, is it still going to be that robust? Can you maintain that advantage as you do other things with customers? And secondly, the trust that you built as you go into other areas, you know, is it going to be as easy as it was in the past to maintain that very close relationship and understanding that you have with your customer base?
Yeah, David, thanks for that question. I think it's a very important question, the thing about legacy, because as you're getting bigger and you're getting older, we're now 20 years old, there's always that question. And it's, we just had a strat session now 2-3 weeks ago where we asked that same question to ourselves. But I think the most important question to ask the whole time, and that's what we're asking us, is how would you disrupt yourself if you're a competitor or if you're in the market? And I think that forces you to think completely different. So that is for us a very, very important question. And we're asking it basically every month. We're asking that question, how would somebody else disrupt us, or how should we disrupt ourselves? Because we know we should know ourselves the best. I think the second question on, as you're adding more products, we're extremely careful of making it more complex. That's where if you look at easy equities and if you look at the relationship with SA Home Loans now, it is on our digital area, so it's not in the branches. Meaning you will go onto the web and you can apply for any one of those. But every one of those are carefully selected to make certain that we keep to our fundamentals of simplicity and transparency. because trust you build over years. We all know you can destroy trust very quickly. And trust, it goes all about that consistency, delivering the same thing over and over and over again so that your client base trust yourself or trust the brand. And for us, that's a very important question to answer. So on those questions, we're very aware of it. We challenge ourselves on it. And we also believe that the market is changing so quickly that you need to look at partners. You can't do everything yourself. And I think that's what we've done very successfully with Sanlam and our Easy Equities and SA Home Loans. So the partnering approach for us is important going forward, and I think that's the way to go, because you need to focus on what you're strong on and bring in partners that can help you creating value for your clients.
Very interesting point about partnerships. People have been talking about them for years and years, these smart partnerships, but I guess to a large degree, Sanlam have been leading the way, and it's interesting to see that another partnership Sanlam has with Capitec, and then of course this almost trifecta of the three of them together with Easy Equities. Corky, Sanlam's your partner as well, isn't it?
You're right, a shareholder in our business.
So you mustn't be too kind to Kerry because he's part of the family.
No, don't worry. David's right. I think that graph also doesn't totally do justice because it shows Capitec on its own, but not Capitec relative. And if you look at Capitec's performance relative to just the market, not even to banks, it's been phenomenal. But I think my three questions for Gerry would be just in terms of for listeners where, you know, going forward, obviously the question is, can one continue, that phenomenal growth? And the share price appreciation was obviously A, due to significant re-rating. You'll recall 2002-03 when Jannie Matonen then, IPO'd, Capitec out of PSG Consult, was trading at, I think, must have been a rand or two. Price to book of 0.6 and is now trading at price to book of 5. But so with going forward in terms of continuing the NAV per share or shareholder value growth, I suppose the three questions are, Capitec built its success on the branch-based model. And interesting, David mentioned Metrobank. Metrobank actually partly also fell apart because they tried to do a branch-based growth model in the UK, because there were other things that went wrong there. But the world is changing rapidly to digital model away from branches. So, Harry, if you were to grow both locally and offshore, would it be more focused on digital, which is also the area I know you like very much, or to what extent will branches still play a role? And maybe the same question along that line is, when you started, your client base was more your lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum, people who weren't getting good service or loans from other banks. And gradually that client base has shifted as well. Just the fact that you do a JV with Easy Equities shows how that client base has moved. So how do you see, would you in future just always have both client bases? How do you serve them with the same model? Recall back in the, was it 1990s, Richard Loach at Nedbank tried to differentiate the bank with different brands. So how do you see those two things playing out?
Good question.
Yeah, thanks, Corky. I think if you look at, we actually gone through 15 million clients, active clients, over the weekend. So, we're still growing very strongly with plus minus 180 to 190,000 active clients. And an active client is a client where we still earn income. So if you don't do a transaction or we've got no income, then we don't count you. And that 15 million is basically representing, the demographics of South Africa. Everyone thought when we started, we're going to start and only looking at people with lower income. But the plan is, when we wrote the business plan, way back in 2000 was to bank 90-95% of South Africans. And it's only people that's looking for private banking that we said we'll leave out, or specialized banking. It's interesting how digital has become a very important role in Capitec. We've got now over 7.5 million of those clients is making use of our app or USSD. So what you're sitting with about seven million clients that is coming into the branch, and about 7.5 that's on a digital platform. Our digital volumes has grown year on year with 55%. So you can see a big adoption on the digital side. But there's still a very strong need of our clients to come into the branch, to connect, and to fully understand the product. So where digital plays for us a very important role is that once the client has been onboarded, then he's on a digital platform. But to onboard, he comes into the branch, and then we sell to him Global One. We've packaged all our products as Global One. And to us, it's so important that the consultant then spends quality time with that client so that a client fully understands the full product offer. Because we believe he must walk out there and he must be a brand ambassador. He must go and tell friends, because that's your easiest way to advertise if you really believe in your brand. So digital is going to definitely be more important. But I think where we are now, we're quite happy with the digital branch combination. I think if you're going to go overseas, you'll definitely go digital. If what we're doing on the mercantile side is to build a digital business banking focusing on SMEs, and we're building the digital side on the retail space. And that gives you the opportunity then to take the brand overseas. I don't think if you go overseas, you won't go with branches, or you'll go with limited branches. But you will go the digital route, because that's the more... that's the norm today. It's also interesting, of our 7 million clients, 7.5 million that's on a digital platform, 3 million of them are still coming into a branch somewhere in a month to come and ask something or do something. So that clearly shows you that there's still, even if you're on a digital platform, there's still a need to come into the branch to interact and to talk to a consultant.
So a bit of a hybrid model. Ferry, I've got a number of questions that have come through here. One of them, or rather, four of them from Denise, and I think she's really trying to focus on the whole SA Home Loans story. I'm going to throw these at you, and perhaps you can pick them up and tell us the whole story. The first one is, what is different this time from the partnership you've always had with SA Home Loans? Is Capitec entering the bond originating space, and is the bank going to have its own home loan book? Apart from the reasons stated for demand for this offering, what is the financial gain going to be for Capitec? In your existing partnership with SA Home Loans, what's your current market share? And then finally, what's the lowest and the highest loan that you've granted together with SA Home Loans?
Like, it's about 10 questions in one sentence, but I'll try and remember them all. I think the important thing is, I think it was 2015 when we had a partnership agreement with SA Home Loans. But then we sold it as SA Home Loans out of our branches. And the mistake we've made was not to integrate that into our Global One product offer. And we've seen it. A lot of people have criticized us with our credit card, where it's not a standalone product, but it's a totally integrated product. And we actually took 2 years longer to go to market. But then when it went, we actually really understand how powerful it is when it's integrated, because then your consultant has got a full view, a single view of the client, and he can offer exactly what you have or what you haven't got. So SA Home Loans we've launched, but it didn't work for us. And then a year ago, we actually sat down and said, but we need to relook at it. And the easy way to go about it is that it's a white label product, but it's done by themselves. Again, what are we good at? We're good at sales and distribution. And we've got 50 million clients, and we need to protect our client base, because if you go to another bank and you want to take a home loan, the first thing they ask is that you actually move your account. So we need to protect ourselves from that perspective. And that's why we brought out a Capitec home loan, but underwritten by SA Home Loans. So it's on their balance sheet. And then we looked at all the processes to say, how can we make the processes more efficient and simplified. So if you go onto the web and you apply, then it takes you about 3 to 5 minutes. You fill in all your details, and then immediately a person from SA Home Loans will contact you and then take you through the whole process. But what it's quite nice is you're getting a tracking number. So in that process, you can any time go onto the web, and then you can track where you are. Because remember, there's the old thing about valuation of the home. There's you must register the bond, et cetera, et cetera. So those processes are still there. But now you can track it, and you can see exactly where it is. And also with that tracking, it gives us the capability that you talk to the same agent every single time. So you don't need to repeat. You start knowing that person. So things like that that we've actually looked at. If you look at the market share that we've got with SA Home Loans, it's extremely small. It's not even a percent. But I think there is a lot of opportunities in it. And it's a partnership. So, you know, it's the same with Sanlam. We've sat down with them and we worked out what is our cost and what is their cost. It won't be a big contributor to our profit. It will be actually very, very low. But like I said, it's helping us to acquire the top end market, because there's always that need to say, but I will go to Capitec, but they don't offer home loans. And it helps us to protect ourselves from that perspective. So that's why it's exciting for us, the whole partnership of SA Home Loans.
And that highest and lowest loan that you've granted, again, knowing that we're talking to the upper end of the market here on BizNews, what would the maximum home loan be that you've granted so far?
I think the highest was about 2.5. You're talking now on the old model. On the new model, there's been a lot of volumes coming through. We're talking here in a region of about, since we've launched, over 7,000 applicants that's came in. And that ranges between 500,000 up to 5 million. It's in that range. But your sweet spot, if you look at home loans, is around about 2 million. It's your sweet spot.
But 5 million then would be the top. Is that correct?
Yeah, the top. Yeah, it's one of those interesting things in the South African market, is that if you look at the mortgage market, there's 1.1 million people that's got a mortgage that they've got. So if you say there's about, let's say, 7 people in a household, then it's 7, make it 8 million people that's got a roof over their head because they've got a mortgage. But we've got 55 million people in South Africa. Your other big challenge that you've got is that a lot of the title deeds, especially in our townships, has been outdated. So it was owned by the grandfather, but it was never transferred to the children. So you can't get a title deed. And if you look at the title deed market or the mortgage market in South Africa, of that 1.1 million, about 900,000 is for bonds over a million plus. And if you really look at the market in South Africa, where we need to unlock potential is around about 500,000. Because if you go into Soweto and I do it as a hobby to go and look at what is the average prices of houses when we're doing market research, and you're in a region of about between 400,000 and 700,000. So we believe there's a big opportunity there, but you're sitting with the title deed challenge because that title deeds are 80% of the time is outdated.
David Shapiro, your question?
I think I was going to move on to the economy because I think I can see we're starting to run out of time. We're not going to have real time. But, I mean, Siri, how do we modernize the South African economy? I mean, how do we get those processes pushed through? Because, I mean, it's so important to be able to prove title and to get so many administrative things done so that you can get an active market moving, you know, that people can claim that title. I mean, what are the steps to be done? But I on top of that, I mean, I did want to go back to the actual market itself and what your feeling is now about the South African economy. We went through a very bleak period where banks have made incredible provisions against bad or underperforming debt. You know, how are you seeing it unfold? With the retailers coming up, there's a slightly better view on how things are in the market. But so it's two kind of questions at different angles. but interested to see, you know, to hear your view on how you're seeing things on the ground.
Maybe just the first one on the title deeds. It's quite interesting. We started a process working with different municipalities and to help the people to get to their title deeds. And we're starting now to get about 150 title deeds per month, which we're registering through our CSI program. And then you're spending about 2,000 to 3,000 rand per title deed. So I think it's something that the government must actually really take and say, how do we take all the red tape out? How do we help people to get title deeds? And then I think the question is, if I look at the so-called trust lands or chief lands, should there not be title deeds? Because that's when you really create value. Because if you drive around into KwaZulu-Natal in the so-called chief lands, there's tremendous nice houses and big houses, but those people can't get financing, et cetera, et cetera. So I think there's a big opportunity and challenge to actually unlock potential, because that's actually how you start. It's you gear on your mortgage and then you look after your house and then you sell and then you create wealth from there. How do we see the economy? I think when we started in April, when COVID hit us, I think we were all doom and gloom. But as it was unfolding, the figures were starting to show much better, it was much better. And to give you two examples, in August, our transaction volumes on swipes were back to normal levels, but you saw a big swing. Typically, we all know restaurants were closed, but then the building suppliers skyrocketed. They were at 140-150%, and that was purely people that's now working from home and upgrading their homes. And the other very interesting one for me is because we've got 1.1 million lending clients or credit clients. And from about July, August, if I compare that to March, the average salary was at 97%, only 3% down. And that was predominantly in the overtime and bonuses that's been cut. So what we've seen in the economy so far is that the casuals and contract workers has definitely lost their work. There was major cutbacks on it. And then on the small companies, people that's employing less than 10 people, they were struggling because they haven't got the cash flow to go through it. So I think short term, we're going to be better off than what we anticipated in April, May. But I'm concerned about the long term because we all know in South Africa, we need to do a couple of things, of which I think the most important one is decide how to grow the country and then to execute. I think we've got challenges, but I think short term, overall, I think we're going to be better than what we all anticipated.
Corky, your question?
Yeah, I think it's important to point out to listeners as well that Capitec, in terms of its capital ratios and reserving for bad debt, potential bad debt, is amongst the highest in the world. So, when you talk to potential investors or investors in Capitec, there's always this fear about the bad debt, but with their capital ratios being where they are and you know, the reserve ratios being where they are, there's enough capital for growth. So I agree with Kelly. The most thing is to open that. But if I switch the mode a bit in terms of just on the longer term, you've got that little mode or JV there with Clean Finance in Eastern Europe, and they've got something in, I think, one of the banks they've got a stake in or investment in or started in Mexico as well. And you've got Mexico, Denmark. What are you learning from that? Or are you contributing more to them in terms of learning, having been very innovative for yourself? But are there things you say, you know, every time you fly back from a board meeting, they say, well, yes, we haven't thought of that, or we did think of that? Or how do you see that go?
It's a really good question, Kerry. Sorry, about Cream Finance. Maybe you can go back before you answer that and just explain who they are and why you bought into them.
Yeah, I think just who Cream is, it's an online lending business. They're operating in six countries. It's Mexico, Czech, Latvia, Spain, Denmark. I think I've got all six now. But it's an online lending business that we bought about 4 years ago. And our whole idea was to actually understand the overseas market. We believed one needs to go internationally, and we still believe it. But as to buy something small and to learn and to understand the differences between, let's say, Spain and Mexico, et cetera, to understand the different economies and really learn from it, because it's always easy when you go in to a country to walk around and you think you know the country. So if I quickly must elaborate, I think the learnings is three things. Is how different the different countries are, the economy, the way you approach the client, it's all different. So that's a big learning. The second one is regulatory. Two things on regulatory is on the national or National Credit Act is far more advanced. There you still allowed when we bought to lend out at 400-500% interest rates. And that was one of the first things to say, this is not a long-term sustainable. One needs to bring it back. But it was quite amazing to see how quickly the regulators actually adjust. And it's not like here in South Africa where you will bring out a new regulation and that will take about 12 months. You're normally 6 to 12 months and then another 6 months to implement. There it's like 2-3 months, and then you need to change systems, processes, etc. And I think the third one is the exchange rate. You think you make a profit, and then suddenly the euro strengthens or weakens, and it's got a massive impact. And then fourthly, just to add to it, there's distance management. So we're very happy with the investment. It's not performing extremely well because with COVID now, those countries have been very hard hit. But from a learning perspective, it was a very small investment. From a learning side, we're very glad that we've done it. So that once we've got Mercantile really going and we're happy with how the retail side is going, we'll make use of this experience and take that abroad.
There's a question from Peter Extian, Gerry. He says, what is the possibility for Capitec to adapt aspects of Square's model?
You're talking Square, the lending
indeed
platform of Square?
Yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's the other nice thing about Cream is that you use different data. They've been using completely different data than what we've used. And that's what we're actually doing now in Capitec. So we started to use some of it. Scoring of capabilities and the same as what we see here. And this might be just interesting to for listeners to understand the better, the more data you've got, the better you can score a client and the better you understand a client. And what we've built over the years is that now our clients at banks with ourselves, 80% of those clients' credit assessment is done via machine learning. Whereby the machine learn goes through your bank statement and identifies your income and all your expenses. And the accuracy on that 80% is now at 99.9. So where it normally would have taken you about 15 minutes to do a credit assessment, now it takes you 30 seconds, with a much greater efficiency. And if you look at our branches, it operates at 10 rand per minute. So when a client sits in front of a consultant, it costs you 10 rand per minute. So you can imagine if you start taking out 10, 15 minutes per credit application. So just coming back to Peter's question is we're using quite a lot of these machine learning, artificial intelligence, and starting to use a lot of other data streams to better score clients.
Another question from the community from Cecil Scher. He says, historically, the shorter the loan, the better chance of being paid without rollovers. With the new home loans, with your new partnership, who carries the risk, Capitec or SA Home Loans? And who will be managing the loan and the debtor?
Everything gets done. So they write the loan. It's their credit model. So it's on their balance sheet. So it's not on our balance sheet. So we don't carry the risk. What we do is the sales and the distribution, and then to make certain that they deliver on the service as what we've agreed. And I think that's the nice thing about it, because we've always been in unsecured, and there's quite a lot of nice new unsecured products that we're bringing out. For example, the access facility that we brought out in May, entering the or attacking the so-called secured market with unsecured. So the SA Home Loan Partnership is, they are unsecured, they understand that, let them focusing on it, we'll focus on the sales and the distribution side.
David Shapiro, your next question.
I'm very interested in the ant story. And why I'm interested in the ant story is because the Chinese government, I mean, has come down very hard on Jack Ma and has skiboshed the listing of this business, mainly because there's fears of them interfering with monetary policy and becoming too big for their boots. Kerry, who keeps you up at night, or who are you watching in an environment that is changing so rapidly, where we get someone like Alibaba starting a financial services company, or for all intents and purposes, almost a payment type system? You know, I'm sure you keep tabs on FirstRand and Standard Bank and concerned about them. But are there any other areas, you know, that are starting to alert you, or to make you not nervous necessarily, but that you have to watch in the kind of digital world that we're going into?
Yeah, I think, David, it's where the financial world is going is everyone is becoming a competitor. You know, if you look at, I spent 2 weeks last year, October, in China, spending time with Ant and WeChat, understanding their models, understanding what they're doing. And I think it's just a matter of time that they're entering the South African market. And as we know, they've gone in with Vodacom. Then you're sitting with WhatsApp that's launched payments, and you're definitely going to sit with Facebook, et cetera, that's coming in. So I think there's going to be a lot of new players that's coming in, and they're all entering via the payment stream, so they're controlling the payment side. And if you've got the payment side, then you understand the clients from that perspective, and then you start taking deposits, and then you start providing credit, which Ant has done. And I think that is the challenge of the regulators going forward, is that the need of the client is changing quite quickly, and there's just going to be more and more entrants coming in into the market. And you need to create a fair playing field between, let's call it, the banks and the non-banks, because our banks are very well regulated and very strongly regulated, but the playing field needs to be equal. And I think that's what you start seeing now in China. So I think there's going to be a big challenge for ourselves, again, given the new entrance. And then there's going to be challenges for the regulators to see how they're going to manage this new digital space, fintech space, because it is going to change quite quickly. And I think, you know, it's come back to what keeps us awake at night is really understanding the client and understanding these international trends, and to say, how do you apply it in South Africa, and to make that experience of the client unique and painless. So for us, that's a big focus. So the digital payment space, I think that's where there's going to be a lot of competition going forward.
Before we ask our two experts to pose their final question to you, Kerry, there's an anonymous one here from Anonymous. We won't tell you who it is, who wants to know how things are going with the partnership with Easy Equities. He does say that he is a shareholder in Purple Capital. So that's the disclaimer.
No, we're very happy. We had about 60,000 clients on Easy Equities before we start. The morning that it was actually launched, we, for the first hour on our app, we had over 200,000 people opening up the Easy Equity app. So that just shows you how people actually wanted to go onto it. And we're now starting to promote it. So we're very happy, and we still very early to tell, but you know, in our full year results in March, April, we'll share the figures with yourselves, but it's going to be very interesting to see what comes out of it. Again, I think there's a lot of value, because I think the biggest value, Alex, we've spoken about it. You can buy, an Amazon share and you don't need to buy a full share. You can buy a 10th or a 20th. So it opens up the market, especially for the smaller, or people that wants to buy 100 rands of shares or 200 rand shares. You can buy either international or South African stocks, at a fraction of the cost, at other places.
You say you haven't marketed it yet, but you had 200,000 people who opened the app in the first hour. Goodness, Gary, yeah. This sounds like a huge potential market.
Yeah, it's actually unbelievable, because I was actually, that morning I was trying to show my wife how it actually works, and I couldn't get up. And then I had to phone our IT department, and they said, we're volumes. That's the nice thing about our game is to be able to handle volumes, because you get these massive spikes.
Incredible. David, we let Corky have the next question, and then you come with the last one. Corky, would you like to go ahead with yours, your final question?
Yeah, hey, maybe just in terms of the allocation of capital. I don't think anybody should or does buy Capitec for a dividend. Your dividend yield is very low. And in fact, I always used to say to Rian, why do you pay a dividend? And I suppose PSG needed it. But going forward, I mean, so in capital allocation, you've got enough capital, you've got enough reserves. But I think, is it safe to assume you will continue using that capital to grow the loan book and keep some reserve potential acquisitions that you might want to do? It's not really been your style that much, but keep the dividend low.
Yeah, okay. We've always been very consistent with our dividend policy, apart from this year where the Reserve Bank said we can't pay out by dividends. But we've always been consistent on it, and we'll stay to that formula. We always said we are a young bank, a small bank, so we need to carry extra capital, and I think it's helped us through the tough times. And we'll continue with that. And then, you know, you've got opportunities, I believe, on the unsecured side, and you've got now mercantile. So on business banking, on the SME side, we believe there's opportunities, and you don't even need that balance sheet to grow that business. So I think we will focus, or we'll stay at the same strategy that has worked for us.
David, your last question, or Harry?
Yeah, it's tongue-in-cheek. In a way, I was in Sandton City. And when you go there on the month end and you go to Capitec ATMs, you see queues that extend about 20 or 30 meters. And when you go to Standard Bank or any of the others, you know, there's maybe one or two people there. And so when I questioned people, I said, you know, Capitec must be building a huge base and making a lot of inroads against First Rand and Standard Bank. And the answer was no. You know, there just aren't enough Capitec ATMs. What's the right answer? Are you making inroads or aren't there enough ATMs?
No, well, if you look at ourselves, we just sit over 5,000. I think it's 5,300 ATMs. If you look at Nedbank, it's about 4,500, and Standard Bank and these places are about 6,000-7,000 ATMs. So it's a matter of you know, our client base that's growing with 2 million clients per year, and it's done for the last 2 years, and that puts pressure on. But I think the real challenge is actually, how do we change behavior in South Africa? And that's where we're spending quite a lot of time, because cash is extremely expensive, and it's extremely risky. And, you know, we've just spoken about payments, QR payments and ease of payments. We need to change the behavior in South Africa where people start using these payment methods, and that's what we're really focusing on. Because, David, if you go into the informal market, the biggest problem there is the taxi owner goes in and you need to pay him in cash, and then you stop at the informal person and you buy your bread and milk, and that's also cash. But if we can bring that into a formal system with QR payments, that you don't have an expensive point of sale machine, and now you're providing a low-cost banking to ourselves, you can then provide credit. Then you start creating a model, which I think is very important, because if we want to grow South Africa, we need to grow or unlock the potential in the informal market in South Africa, because that will help us to create jobs and to really start growing. So, yes, we can probably put in more ATMs, but I think the biggest focus is actually to change client behavior so that we can unlock the potential in South Africa.
How far are QR code payments away? How far away are QR code payments?
Alec, if you go onto our app now, you will see Capitec Pay, which is then enables you with any QR payment. You can just then take a photo and you can pay. So it's not that you need to have a separate one for Zapper, SnapScan, et cetera, everything is integrated into our app. Scan to pay, so it's quite easy. And QR codes are running out. We are rolling out. We're rolling out in the region of about 500 merchants per month. And then we're starting in the new year with a massive campaign to make people aware that the way to pay is actually with QR payments, because it's beneficiary to the merchant and to yourself, especially now with COVID, because you don't need to touch anything.
Kerry, it's been such a pleasure talking with you again today, and I'm sure I speak for Corky and David and the whole business community, and thank you very much for your time. While we say goodbye to Kerry, there is a question here which is related, David and Corky, from Len. He says, I'm expecting almost 3 million rand from a discount property deal. Should I leave it in rental property or invest in Naspers Process or Capitec?
Let Cookie answer that first. I'll come in later.
I was going to say the same. I mean, Capitec has just got so much growth still ahead of it. That, you know, compared to Naspers, well, that's also a difficult one, 10 cents. But Capitec can still, you know, grow into the world via clean finance as well. So longer term, it's just, you know, it's a fantastic company. And as I was listening to Kerry, I was taking notes, and you realize how far ahead they are of the competition. So you'll never worry owning it. It's fairly expensive at the moment. So don't expect, you know, 12-month satisfaction, but 3-5 years, you're going to look back and say, oh, that was a good buy.
So you'd be recommending to Jen that to Len rather, that he doesn't worry about another discount or another property rental or Naspers or Process. He can stick with Capitec, Corky?
Yep, absolutely.
David?
No, I agree. I've been knocked out by Capitec and what they've done. And, you know, one's had to fend off so many detractors. And there have been a lot of questions about the rollover loans. You know, we've gone through all of that. And yet they come out on top. And you just have to listen to Kerry. I mean, it's always wonderful to learn from your guests, Alec. And, you know, once again, we've learned so much, and to understand how they're looking, you know, how they're looking at the future. I have to add on on a funny note, because you heard what Kerry had to say about how to encourage people to change their habits. My daughter sent me a picture of a busker in New York, chaps, you know, on the side in Central Park playing his saxophone there. And, you know, he normally had the case open and you throw a few coins or a dollar in, etc. In this case, he had his cryptocurrency account. You know, don't send in something, rather do a direct transfer to his cryptocurrency account. So, you know, that's the way we have to go. You know, don't send me your coins, just put a deposit there. But, you know, I think it's been a phenomenal success story, and I expect them to continue the kind of growth that we're seeing. And there's not much competition from the other banks in terms of trying to catch them up on their compound interest. So process, I don't dislike process or NASPERS either. Still very, very strong on China.
2 weeks ago, when we had the chief executive of Sasol here, Fleetwood Krobler, Piet Viljoen had some quite pointed questions. It might have been coincidental, but the Sasol share price tumbled immediately after the webinar and kept falling. I don't know if it got to your 70 Rand level that you were saying you'd look at it again, David, but can you anticipate that after what we've heard today, that Capitec share price would go the other direction, given that the two of you are so bullish?
I just think circumstances are just favoring Capitec and emerging markets at the moment. I think we're in for quite a strong run. How do you explain that? It's not easy to explain. It just seems to be a very positive momentum following the election. And also, I'm 100% equity man. I don't believe in any other asset class, simply because you've got people like Kerry running companies, who just continue to look for growth. And you can buy Capitec share and sleep at night. It's Kerry who's got to stay awake now, worrying who's coming to, who's attacking them and, what the competition is. So he's working for you, and it's a good boss to have working for you, or a good partner to have working for you. So, but I think we're in for a nice run in equities generally. So, and if you're looking for banks, as Cookie said, Capitec is a little expensive, but you can't fault their track record and where they're going and the energy that's still there. So, Cookie, I don't know what their policy is. I don't know what their remuneration policy is. That's always a worry, but so I'm not sure whether they stand up with all the other banks who I see. We've just had from Standard how they love to pay themselves these huge bonuses, but I can't recall any major issues with Capitec.
It might just be worthwhile to end off just to warn. Yeah, Capitec priced the book roughly of 6.97. On a PE, it's 26 to 27. So the gap, the valuation gap between Capitec and APSA has actually never been this wide in the 20 years I've looked. So you only, if you're a holder, you might be disappointed in the next 2 years that something like APSA, in a recovering market, your cheap shares might just recover quicker. And so for 18 months, APSA might just outperform Capitec. But if you look back again in 5 years' time, that compounding of the shareholder value will overtake that. And,
And as Warren Buffett says, when you buy a share, think of it as the stock market closing for 5 months, not 18 months. So the tip is very strongly and very well made. Cookie, lovely having you on the program. David, as always, it's a privilege to spend Mondays with you. Look forward to the next time. And thanks, gents. Thanks to the BizNews community for participating today. Before we leave, Stuart, just let us know where the recording is going to be.
Excellent. Thanks, Alec, and thanks, Cookie and David. Alec, I've just put the YouTube channel on the chat box, which is also on the control panel on the right-hand side. So people can click on that. It'll take them through to the BizNews YouTube channel, and we'll hopefully get this one up in the next couple of hours. But thanks again for everything.
Thank you for joining us for this webinar, which is compiled and produced by the team at biznews.com. A recording of this webinar will be available later today on the biznews.com channel on YouTube. From our team, until the next time, cheerio.